consider what you first did swear unto. Too fast to study and to see no woman. But here's the trick, it's flat treason against a kingly state of youth. Your stomachs are too young to fast, and abstinence will make you sick. We made a vow to study, lords, and in that vow we have forsworn our books. We've lost the war, for when would you, or you, or you have ever found such words in books as the poems you sang before? For love, what is a vow except to be broken? What is an oath except to be unspoken? What is a contract but a meaningless token? Are you a man or just the plan your parents made? Are you a man or just a flannel suit waiting to get paid? Are you a man or just some brand flakes and another inside trade love?
Hello and welcome to Broadway Videos, this week on Broadway for Sunday, August 11, 2013. My name is James Marino, and in the broadcast this morning we have Peter Felicia and Michael Portantier. Peter is a theater journalist and historian with a number of books, his most recent being Strippers, Showgirls, and Sharks. His columns appear at MTI, Critcherland, Masterworks, Broadway, and many other places. Good morning, Peter.
Hi.
Hi. Also with us is Michael Portantier. Michael is a theater reviewer and essayist whose work appears at Talkin' Broadway, the Sondheim Review, and Broadway Stars. He is also a photographer whose work can be seen at followspotphoto.com as well as many other places on the internet. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Some of you out there listening might be wondering about this ominous rumble in the background. We're having a technical problem on our side that we can't sort out right now, so just bear with us this week as we have a little rumble occasionally here and there. Sounds like a little thunder, but maybe it will be preclude what happened in the park this week with Love's Labor's Lost. So Michael and Peter got a chance to see it. So Peter, why don't you start us off with it?
Sure. One of the most valuable things about this production of Love's Labor's Lost may very well be that everybody who sees it, who was too young to see Two Gentlemen of Verona way back in the early 70s, may understand a little better why Two Gentlemen of Verona won the Tony Award as Best Musical and Follies did not. Because Love's Labor's Lost is a good time. It's fun. It's summer fun. It has nothing more on its mind than to entertain and give a good time. And that's exactly what Two Gentlemen was as well. And I think it's one of the reasons why it won the Tony way back when. The cast is terrific beyond belief. I have to say, too, that the music is just sensational in its pop rock way. And reminded me of Galt McDermott's music for Two Gents way back when. So I like that quite a bit. The lyrics actually is superior to Two Gents lyrics, which were set very strangely. John Guare once told me that he gave the lyrics to Galt McDermott, and that's the way Galt set them. At least now we know what came first, the music or the lyrics in that show. And I always thought, well, you should have rewritten them because there are so many false accents, like meat chopper for an occupation. You could have just easily written botanist and you would have been fine. But none of that really comes up in Love's Labor's Lost. Oh, occasional false accent, but the lyrics are pretty good. Beautiful setting out there, and in case you don't know the story, it's about three guys who claim that they're going to give up everything that is pleasurable, and there's a very funny scene at the beginning where they're putting all sorts of items in a trunk, including a bong, including condoms, because they are just giving up women, and we'll see how long that lasts. Well, it doesn't last very long at all. The show doesn't either. It's only about 90 minutes, and aside from the fact that there's this wonderful ending and then there isn't, it gets very dour. The original play by Shakespeare does as well. It rather short circuits itself at the end, and I wouldn't mind fooling around with Shakespeare and having just a happy-go-lucky ending as opposed to the bittersweet ending that comes up. But nevertheless, up until that point, it's nonstop fun, and God bless this high school band that shows up and augments what's going on as well. But a sensational production in many respects. I'd like to see it move. I'd certainly like a cast album. And I was there Friday night, by the way, where we had to wait and wait and wait. I think because they were wiping down the seats because it had rained. But once it started at 9 o'clock, because it starts at 8:30, by the way, this year, 8:30 has been the curtain time at the Delacorte as opposed to the usual 8. So we certainly waited, but it was worth waiting for. Because a good time was had by all.
All right. Michael, what did you think about this?
I absolutely agree that it's a tremendous amount of fun. I agree that the cast is, what was your word, phenomenal beyond belief. the cast, if just reading the cast is an experience. We've got Daniel Breaker, whom I adore as the king. You have Colin Donnell as Barone, who, you know, first of all, I guess gets to display more of his comic gifts in this show than maybe in some others that we've seen. But also, he has gotten so ridiculously good looking. It's just, you know, you're like looking at this person, is this a human being on the stage? I mean, they costume him in this fantastic, very expensive undershirt, as he refers to it himself in one of the lyrics. And it's really, you know, I mean, he's perfect for the part. He creates quite an effect. Then you have Bryce Pinkham, who, you know, is another incredible looking guy as Longueville, and Lucas Neerverbrugge, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, as Dumaine. And then as the princess, we got Patty Murren from Liz Estrada Jones, the title role in that. And then, Cesar Samoya does an amazing turn as Armado, whom many people have already, after seeing the show, have compared to Aldolfo in The Drowsy Chaperone. But, of course, this role is very much along the lines as it was originally written by Shakespeare. So let's just say that it dates back a lot further than Aldolfo. And Cesar Samoya, I've seen for years in a number of shows, but I don't think he's ever had a showcase like this. And it's you know, the audience is in the palm of his hand. Everyone is just adoring him. Kevin De La Guila is dull. Costard is...
Make clear that that's the character name.
That's the Sorry. Thank you.
That's what they mean about me.
I walked into that one. He's brilliant as dull. How's that?
Right.
Charlie Pollock, whom I didn't even recognize. I first saw Charlie Pollock in Urinetown in San Francisco as Bobby Strong, the clean-cut Bobby Strong. I didn't even recognize him until... I mean, I knew he was in this show, but I didn't realize which person he was until I checked the program about halfway through, because he plays this kind of surfer dude and really very well, this kind of scruffy, surfer dude. And he does a brilliant job with it. Rebecca Naomi Jones is in it. The two professors are played by Rachel Dratch and Jeff Hiller. Andrew Durand is also in it. It's an amazing cast. We should say songs by Michael Friedman and direction by Alex Timbers, who are the creators of Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson. The show is generally written in the same style as that one. I would say this one is maybe even a little more freewheeling and outrageous and scattershot. I do think that I'm a little surprised, Peter, that you like the lyrics so much. I mean, there were a great many good lyrics, but there's also, you know, this is another show where sometimes the lyrics rhyme and sometimes they don't. And to me, that's almost more vexing than when they don't attempt to rhyme at all. Is that not an issue for you?
Yeah, what I was saying, though, is that the lyrics are better than Two Gentlemen of Verona.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. Yeah, well, fair enough. Okay.
That's a left-handed compliment.
They also do, well, no, but I do think, they also do this thing where, for comic effect, they'll put, they'll extend a bar of music to have, 50 words in it. So in other words, someone will be singing something like, I met a girl last night, we had a lovely time, but now today I don't know if I want to see her again, and I don't know what I was thinking last night, and I'm really not sure what was going on, you know, that kind of thing, which can be very, very funny, but maybe like the first one or two times. When it goes on and on, like throughout the show at various points, I think less so. So I think that they, I think they're tremendously talented people, and God knows the audience just really seemed to love the show. I mean, there was lots and lots of laughter throughout at the comic bits and the lyrics and the performances and the direction. But I do think that in my personal opinion, if these guys maybe spent a little bit more time on crafting the shows, their shows along more traditional lines, and then using, you know, the departures less frequently, I think that it ultimately might make for better pieces of musical theater. Because really, I mean, this is so, they draw from everything. They spoof everything. There's a spoof of a boy band. There's the spoof of the Hispanic character. There's lots of different types of pop cultural references. Like it seems like hundreds throughout the show, and many would argue that that's in the spirit of the original, which is one of Shakespeare's earlier comedies. Although it was written apparently contemporaneously, more or less, with Romeo and Juliet and A Midsummer Night's Dream, which is kind of amazing. So it's not as if his powers weren't already, you know, fully developed. But I do feel that way. I kind of, you know, I mean, actually, you know, sometimes it really did seem like they were doing anything for a laugh. And I'm not 100% sure how I feel about that. I think maybe a little more discipline would actually be for the better, and then would make the you know, the crazy parts even funnier. The friend I went with, you know, I'm a pop music ignoramus, but the friend I went with said that he thought that they used some actual hooks from current pop music. I'm not sure. I can't say, but he was pretty definite about that. So I'm going to have to ask around and see if other people felt the same way. I know when the boy band number started, it seemed like the audience laughed immediately. So almost as if they recognized it. So maybe at least the beginning of it was like a One Direction number or something. I don't know. I'm going to have to check that out. But boy, I mean, Peter is right. If you want to have a good time for free, P.S., I can't think of a better recommendation than to see this show, despite the fact that, you know, I personally have some objections to the way it's constructed.
So tell me about what your thoughts are about why is the public theater bringing in reviewers so late into this production?
Oh, I think we've discussed this before. They always do, especially they do it even downtown. Isn't that correct? To a certain degree,
so too, yeah.
That's just their philosophy. But also, I think especially in the case of the park, they feel that since it's I don't know if they've ever actually said this, but I just assume that they feel that since it's free, they have more latitude to have people. Lots of people see it before the critics weigh in. It's not as if people are paying money and, you know, need to get the critics, you know, opinions earlier on in the process.
I appreciate that. I'm just thinking that more people would hear about it and want to see their productions.
True.
If they brought in, reviewers a little bit earlier.
Right, but I think they've addressed that, and the point there is that they are almost always, you know, full, no matter what it is.
Yeah.
So it would just be a question of actually having more people.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
So it's great. It's any thoughts, any chances that this might have a future life after the park?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I would think that that's got to be in the back. Well, I think it's in the back of every production's mind to begin with. But given the fact that it seems raring to go, somebody said, well, I don't think it's going to be as effective indoors as outdoors. Hmm. And yeah, that's probably true. But the thing is, if you haven't had the outdoor experience, you don't miss the outdoor experience. And many people won't have that experience of having seen it in the park. So they'll just go and see this very pretty set and enjoy it for what it is. So I think it is going to come somewhere between 41st and 54th Streets.
And, of course, there's a tradition of several shows that have transferred from the Delacorte to Broadway, and people didn't seem to, you know, stay away from those.
Right.
Hmm. All right, so let's move on. So next up, we have First State over at the Long Acre Theater. Peter got a chance to see this. So, Peter, tell us what you think.
Well, it's a very good show for First States. There's no question about it. And I really do hope that many people will go to see this show because I think it's very intelligent. I think it hits all the marks that it needs to hit about what it is to go on a first date. And while we're dealing with a heterosexual couple here, it could just as easily apply to a gay couple of either sex. So the touchstones are there. That's what I like about it. Who's going to pick up the check? Is it going well? Did I just say the wrong thing? Oh, do I wish I could take that back? I know a person who says that one of the things he looks for as he dates women is that they offer him food from her plate. Yes, that she offers him food. Uh-huh. She actually cuts a piece of food and puts it on his plate. And while he doesn't say that he will not date this woman again, if she doesn't do that, this is a very important sign to him that shows that she's into sharing, and that's his value. When this came up in First Date, I thought, wow, you know, I mean, really, this is amazing to me, because I'd never heard of that before being anything of worth value to somebody, but
does he offer first, or does she have to offer first?
I think she has to offer first.
What the hell is that?
Please, we all have our values, we all have our neuroses, but I mean, nevertheless, yeah, I was stunned when that turned out to be something that was important to him, but nevertheless, it is, and so these little issues all come up. The one thing where I think the show doesn't do well is in the music. I don't think the music is very interesting at all. Now, before the show started, I looked at the playbill, and I saw that there was a song called The World Wide Web is Forever. And I thought, well, I wonder if that song would have been written had there been no The Internet is for Porn in Avenue Q. It does seem to be that. And there is an issue in the show about the fact that one of the participants in the date Googled the other beforehand, you know, and that's I think that's a good issue, you know, and I think it happens. I certainly know that this gentleman I was talking about who has the food issue tells me a lot about the Googling that he does before he goes on a date. So I thought this was very apt. And what was interesting to me, though, is it seems to me, I don't think I fell asleep, that they dropped the song. It's in the playbill, but the song was dropped. Okay, fine. That happens. Then there was the next song called That's Why You Love Me. And this song was so putrid, I thought, my God, how bad could the World Wide Web is Forever have been if indeed, you know, they retained That's Why You Love Me and dropped the other song. Of course, you know, some of this has to do with the fact that the song is sung by the Bad Boys, a chorus of Bad Boys. And that's an issue in this show, too. The fact that this woman, who is on her first date, admits that she's the type who likes Bad Boys. And there are certainly women who have subverted themselves by choosing Bad Boys as the ones they're going to date. And our guy here, Aaron, played by Zachary Levi, wonderfully, by the way, wonderfully, is not a bad boy. He's a nice guy. And this is another thing that comes up as people date. You know, the fact is, nice guys often are criticized, castigated, and dropped because they're nice guys and women want what they think are more exciting guys, and yet they will pay the price for that as time goes on. Krista Rodriguez is the woman who makes this decision. She's playing Casey in the show, and she does it wonderfully. I'm telling you, these two people are terrific beyond belief. And there's not a false move. They really make us sweat with them on all the chaos-inducing moments that happen during a first date. There's also a smart device, though it's gone to one time too often, about the fact that Casey has engaged a friend of hers to call her in the middle of the date just to get her out of the date, to pretend that something's terribly wrong. Oh, excuse me, my father just had a stroke, you know, that type of thing. I've got to go. So, and that's pretty funny. The first time. Unfortunately, they go that three times, and I think that's at least one time too many. But still, a pleasant evening. We're talking about summer a great deal, but I think this one has a bit more staying power because it does tell the truth about dating. Yes, of course, I wish the music were better. I will admit that it may be because it sounds more pop rock than I would have enjoyed, and some rap music too, which is pretty ugly. But still, all in all, the fact that it tells the truth about what these dates are, I can't imagine there's anybody who won't identify with the horrors that one has to endure when one is on, by the way, a blind date, in fact. I wish this show well. It's going to be hard for it to catch on, but you know, it's often been compared to "I Love You, You're Perfect, Don't Change," and you know that would seem to have had a hard time catching on to. No stars, no profile, and yet it did, to say the least. Now, some may say, well, that was off-Broadway and off-Broadway prices, and the budget was lower, and I suppose that's true. But nevertheless, there is an audience for this show, and I hope the producers know enough to find it and keep it going, because it does deserve to live.
So it was developed out of town, wasn't it?
Seattle,
Fifth Avenue.
I don't think it was Fifth Avenue, was it? God, I can't see it in that theater, but anyway, you may be right.
You know what? Where is it? Sold out premiere at the Seattle's Fifth Avenue Act Theater. So they have a smaller theater?
Must be. Originally, you're right. Originally, co-produced the Fifth Avenue Theater and the Contemporary Theater, Seattle, Washington. Now, I've never been to either one. I've certainly seen pictures of Fifth Avenue, and it's an enormous place, and certainly many bigger pre-Broadway tryouts have gone there. I'm guessing, and I'm only guessing, that even though they were part of the sponsors of the show, I have a feeling it started at the Contemporary Theater. But again, this is my giving guesstimates and nothing more.
Sure. And pulling from Michael's previous comments of Love's Labor's Lost, this cast, could they be any better looking?
Nah.
I mean, it looks like a soap opera. These are just, I'm stunned.
What a good line.
There's been a lot of that going on lately. I don't know what the character actor is going to do.
There is a character actor, certainly, in First Date, believe me.
Is it Blake Hammond here?
Blake Hammond, right.
Blake Hammond is character actor, who's drop dead beautiful as well. Look
yes,
at him. So, I mean,
a lot of inner beauty.
If anything, it seems that it has something for everybody in this. I look forward to seeing it. Michael, you're going to see it this coming week?
Yes. Peter, do you remember, was there in I Love You, Perfect Now Change, was there at least one dating scene in that? I can't remember either, but
I saw it very early on.
Yeah, so. And that was seven
a long
years
time
ago now.
Yeah.
That was probably almost before Phantom opened.
My point is, some people have objected to First Date, and even some people who haven't seen it yet, on the, you know, in terms of the subject matter and the quote unquote sitcom-y aspect of it. But I always get uncomfortable when people object to something on that basis, because to me, if it's well done, you know, it's you know, why not? You know, I mean, I think every I can't really think of another musical that examines that specific subject matter, at least not a well-known one. And is it less creative than, you know, another revival of a 40-year-old show or a jukebox musical? So I'm a little uncomfortable with that criticism.
Well, of course, we'll see what you say next Sunday when we talk about it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, what's really nice is it didn't devolve into silly farce. The intelligence quotient is there. And that's what I liked. A lot of thought went into this. It was not slapdash at all, and lesser talents would have made it slapdash. So my hat is really off to the gentleman who put this together. I believe they're TV writers.
No, that's what I mean. Yeah, and I'm sorry, that was my point. Again, I haven't seen it. But regardless of how well or not it's done, I just object when people object to the subject matter itself and saying that doesn't deserve a place in a Broadway musical. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, frankly, with all the talk about getting 20-somethings into the theater, this is a good one to do it. So I wish them well.
So, from their website, which you should check out because all the pictures of the beautiful people are there, Austin Winsberg is the book writer, and he has in his credits here, Winsberg has written numerous television pilots for ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, and ABC. He's written for movies, New Line, DreamWorks Animation for Warner Brothers. So he certainly is out of the Hollywood set there. And Alan Zachary, who wrote the music and the lyrics, has an interesting line in his bio as well. It says, currently he's collaborating on the score for two new musicals for Broadway Across America and Warner Brothers. So good stuff to have in the chain if we can steal some back from the left coast.
Well, it's, yeah, and to refer to Peter's comment, it seems like both of the shows we're talking about this week, Love's Labor's Lost and First Date, are really, really making an attempt to get young people into the theater. There are a lot of other shows now that we could think of, Natasha Pierre and The Great Comet. And again, you know, I mean, I applaud that. You know, if it's not done well, we can all name several shows that you know, where that's the case, and then, you know, but that they're no worse than any other show that fails. So when you compare it, at least they're original, you know, I really applaud the effort. And when they are good, you know, it's really quite exciting. So I hope we see more of these, and I think we will.
So on their bio, they also list ZacharyandWiner.com. So it seems that this is not just a one-off show for them, that they are writing multiple shows together. And if you go to ZacharyandWiner.com, it has a preview for Secondhand Lions, opens up September 2013 at Seattle's Fifth Avenue Theater. So they must have a good rapport with the Fifth Avenue Theater and are bringing another thing in, which is the... seems to be co-produced by Warner Brothers Theatrical Ventures, called Secondhand Lion, September 10th through October 6th at the Fifth Avenue Theater. So, and they won the Richard Rodgers Award in 2012. I didn't realize that. Huh. So, talented folks combining with good-looking folks for a Broadway first date. All righty. So, next up on our agenda is... PETA jumped into the Toyota Camry. Is it a Toyota Camry? And
uh-huh.
Headed up to Newtown, Connecticut to see Seussical in a special production. So, PETA, why don't you tell us about that?
A very special production. It's still eerie to drive to Newtown, Connecticut. This is my second time going there since December 14th. There has been a foundation started called the 1214 Foundation, which is going to help heal the wounds that happened on that horrible day when Adam Lanza went into the Sandy Hook Elementary School and slaughtered 26 people, including 20 children. So one of the best ways to heal, director Michael Unger thought, was to do a production of Seussical, which reiterates that a person's a person no matter how small. So he certainly did it the hard way, in the sense that he double cast because there were so many kids who wanted to be involved. And I was really impressed at how magnificent the kids were. What's really something is that John Tartaglia, whom we all love and adore, came out to play the Cat in the Hat. And wasn't that something for him to make time to do this and go out there and work with the kids? And he was really sensational. And it makes you really wonder what would have happened to Seussical way back at the start of this century if indeed they had somebody with his abilities playing Cat in the Hat, because no matter how many characters he had to be, he was always marvelous, especially when playing Maisie's cabana boy when she goes down to Palm Beach. But really, the kids in the leads were amazing. A kid named Kyle Watkins playing Horton, and Brianna Bausch playing Gertrude, and Kirsten Liniger playing Maisie, and Jane Sheeran playing Jojo. And again, this is the Saturday afternoon cast. There are four different kids playing those parts. But, you know, I assume that Watkins, you know, came from Newsies, and Bausch and Liniger were part of Bring It On, and Sheeran obviously is an Annie. I mean, you know, it has to be, because, you know, and then, you know, on the other hand, I thought, oh, no, you know what these are? These are kids that Michael Unger knows from casting his children chorus in A Christmas Carol down at the MacArthur Theater in Princeton. He's been doing that for 15 years. So these kids he's obviously shepherded through the ranks, because I'm telling you, they understood every syllable. I mean, what the kid playing Gertrude did with the word facade made me bark out a laugh right out loud. I'm telling you, she was just so terrific. I mean, they really are tremendous pros. So afterwards, I said to Michael, gee, you know, these kids are amazing, you know. So I'm surprised they don't have bios in the playbill, because after all, John Tartaglia does. And I mean, so I would think that you would give these other pro kids their bios. I know you have already inferred where this is going. No, they are not professional kids, but they should be. And any agent who doesn't sign up all four of them is out of his or her mind, because I'm telling you, they are amazing. But I do credit Michael Unger for making them what they are, because they couldn't possibly have come to the conclusions of detailing every word and knowing what every word means, and giving the correct inflection, the proper gestures to support that. Just amazing. I have to say, after the show, Lynn Ahrens and Steve Flaherty were there as well. God love them. And Lynn said to me, I was in tears during the entire performance. I was too. To watch 20 kids up there who were at that school that day and seeing them do amazing work, just caring so much, giving it their all, and knowing that there could be 20 more kids up there, it was very moving. And much of Seussical, after all, is a story of survival, about nurturing, about getting through difficult times. There are some lyrics that are really very pointed about this issue that it must have been hard for the kids to even deal with. But this was a case of facing fears, and I'll never forget it. I may forget many big hits that I even adored, but this is something that was truly unforgettable because of all the emotion that went along with the production itself. But even if there had been no Massacre, wouldn't that have been wonderful? I'm telling you, one would have to be astonished by the level of professionalism, proficiency, and dedication that came out there at Newtown High School, only 1.3 miles away from Sandy Hook Elementary School. So thanks to Michael Unger and Van Dean, the producer who made this happen. Van did a concert some months ago to support what was going on there, and it became enmeshed in the community. And as a result, you know, he was the producer here. He's an up-and-coming Broadway producer. We're going to hear a lot from him, but nevertheless, the fact that he made this happen as well certainly is something that we cannot forget. So congratulations to all, and my admiration forever to the kids and everybody else who was involved with this production of Seussical.
We interviewed Van about a
yeah,
year
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, right,
about
yeah,
a year
sure,
ago or
sure,
so.
Sure,
I'll have
sure.
to link to that in the show notes.
Sure.
So
mm-hmm.
Van's, as you mentioned, an up-and-coming producer and actually a Tony Award-winning producer already.
Mm-hmm.
We look forward to many, many more years of Van's creative mix of artistry and business to bring us new works all over the place. So, this is it was quite a I can imagine an emotionally mixed feeling of bringing artistry to the stage there, as well as remembering the terrible events that have happened there. So, you know, did it feel like there was a lot of outside support coming into the community, or did you feel that the community really is on the road to recovery there, or are they still
this is a good point, because John Tartaglia was on some morning TV show yesterday in New York City, and as a result, he was late getting to the theater through no fault of his own. It took longer for me to get out there too. Traffic was bad, construction, all that kind of business. So as a result, close to 2 o'clock, the announcement was made. We're not going to be quite ready at 2. It may be 2:15, it may be 2:20. In fact, it turned out to be 2:35. But you know, this may have been a very strange blessing in disguise, because hearing the buzz and chatter in the community in that theater was very heartwarming, and people just need to be with people. And they had an extra 35 minutes to bond with each other, and I think that's very good. I mean, I'll grant you, 8 months have passed, and it's not like this is the first opportunity these people have had to bond with each other, but nevertheless, it doesn't hurt to be with people, and all these people know firsthand, or damn close to it, what went on, and certainly have been affected by it in a way that the rest of us just cannot imagine. And so I was very glad that they had that communal experience, that extra time to talk, to share views, and just be together. It means a lot. But Michael Baruti is the name of the gentleman who started the 1214 Foundation, and he's the one who started talking to Michael Unger about, gee, you know, we should do something one of these days. And Michael, as I understand it, said, let's do it now. There's talk about building a performing arts center there. In 5 years, that's supposed to happen. You know, his feeling was now.
All right, so let's move on to what's happening this week.
Well, you know, it's incredibly heartwarming to hear that wonderful story about the healing properties of theater. But to balance it, you know, when you have closed-minded, ignorant people reacting to theater, sometimes without seeing it, you can have this horrible situation where, did you read about this?
Yeah, school in Nebraska.
Yes. Let me just, you know, summarize here. I'm reading from the Journal Star. Harold Scott says he was fired as superintendent of Parkview Christian Schools because he performed in a community theater production of The Producers. Scott has been an educator for 22 years and superintendent at the school started by Calvary Community Church since 2011. In an email response to questions Wednesday, he said he was told the reason for his termination is that Calvary's pastor, Dr. Carl Godwin, felt his participation would have a negative reflection on Calvary Community Church and Parkview Christian School. Scott played Max, one of the main characters in Mel Brooks' The Producers, at the Loft Community Theater near Manly. The play is about two men who scheme to get rich by overselling interest in a Broadway flop. It includes jokes about Nazis, homosexuals, and show business, and includes gay characters.
you know, would you, if somebody said, okay, I'm going to tell you a story, tell me if you think it's true or false. You would have to say, no, that doesn't happen anymore. And this really does remind us that there are parts of the world where this indeed does happen. What was also poignant to me was the fact that I was in Lincoln, Nebraska about 6 weeks ago, and I didn't get any of those feelings because, of course, there was convention of high school theater groups. And so, of course, I was with like-minded people. And
right.
So as a result, we were a closed community for that week, and a good time was had by all. But, you know, beyond those four blocks where we were at the hotel and the theater, obviously there's more going on. And it's very sad that the reaction to the producers should be this way. I mean, we can think of so many shows where this might have happened, but not that we would have wanted it to, but I would have guessed that the producers would have been one to cause this much alarm. But again, it just reiterates how much work we still have to do in educating people.
Yes.
And sometimes we think we've come awfully far because we've lulled ourselves into this complacency being in a part of the world where ho-hum. But there's still plenty of work to be done. But the wonderful thing is it will be done. This man may die for a lot of sins, but nevertheless, there are going to be people who are going to say, this is unfair. This is terrible. This guy was good at his job. What he does on his own time is something that should be his own decision and value. So again, this is a step backwards, but the step backwards we've seen in this fight have always meant two steps forward. So the people who fight us on these issues are going to lose. They see it happening. This may be a victory for the other side at the moment, but it won't be a permanent one.
Well, and the fact that it's getting so much publicity is in itself a step forward.
Sure.
So,
sure.
Yeah,
I think that we've seen so many cultural changes in the last 10 years that I think let's hope that this is the last type of story that we hear about and we reflect on this in a number of years and say, I can't believe that this ever happened in our history. It's interesting from a business standpoint that it says in this article that I'm seeing, according to its website, Parkview is a non-denominational Christian school with students from preschool through 12th grade. It was founded in 1980 by Calvary Community Church, but several years ago became a separate nonprofit entity. Well, if it became a nonprofit entity, it's usually not afforded the latitude that a religious institution is afforded, and that they shouldn't be able to do this. But it seems as though that the gentleman that was fired seems to not be litigious or not be engaging in this. He's moving on. He just, he said in this article he wishes everybody the well and he'll miss them all and he's moving on. So it's terrible to hear stuff like this. And I think that maybe the Newtown production of Seussical should play this school next.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could learn from it.
Yes.
All right. So this week coming up, or actually not this week coming up, but today coming up later today, is the closing of the Nance. It's closing today, August 11th is when we're recording. Nathan Lane will be once again not on a Broadway stage. What do we think about this?
What's really good is the PBS has said it's going to record it. So people who didn't get the chance to see the dancer are going to at least have a chance to see it on their home screens as in the months to come. So I think that's really quite nice if that's going to happen. I was a little surprised the play didn't do better business. It was never a hot ticket, and I'm sure that disappoints everybody connected with it. Especially Nathan Lane, who, after all, in the past has been tremendous box office. For whatever reason, this one did not catch fire, and it's too bad it didn't, because there were many assets in the Nance, and Nathan Lane was certainly one of them.
Hmm.
Yeah, James, it sounds like you hadn't heard about the PBS thing.
No, maybe I had heard about it. I forgot it, but
it was just recently. I think it was just recently announced, and I believe they've added two post-closing performances this week. I believe at which they're going to tape it, and I presumably there will be invited audiences. I don't know anything about that, but yeah.
No, I definitely, if it was recently that they announced that I missed it somehow, some way in my summer travels. So, as Michael mentioned a few weeks ago, Monday, August 12th is the closing of Splash, or no, August 11th is the closing of Splash, but Musical Mondays on the 12th will be rejuvenated, the XL Club, starting with Billy Porter, Tony Award-winning actor Billy Porter, will be kicking it off at XL.
Is that on the 12th?
Yeah, that's what I'm reading here is on the 12th.
Some okay, I didn't realize that. Boy, they didn't waste any time, did they?
That's yeah. So XL is starting on Monday night, 6 p.m. to midnight, 512 West 42nd. If you're in town.
And a reminder that that's the same night that The Women is being shown in Bryant Park for free, a really great adaptation of a very famous Broadway play. And you can do both, because I think Musical Mondays doesn't really kind of get kicking till later.
So much later. I love the success story of Billy Porter, who mentioned when he received his Tony that maybe not just Tony, but some other award. He got so many awards this year that I was at one ceremony, which he pointed out that he hadn't been on Broadway since that revival of Grease, and that's about a dozen years ago. And I'm sure there were times in that dozen years when he thought, you know, that's it, I'll never get back to Broadway. And it just goes to show that the right part for the right person, the right time, the right place, it can still happen. Miracles do happen. And certainly Billy Porter must have thought at times, I've peaked, you know, the best is over for me. And who knew the best was indeed yet to come.
That's a very good point. But also, let's not forget how fantastic he was off Broadway in Angels in America.
Sure.
Yeah.
He was
really
good. Yes,
really,
indeed.
Really good. I mean, that whole...
That was a good production.
It was. It really, really
yeah.
was.
Yeah. Christian Bale really knocked me out, too, because we hadn't seen him in such a role, but he was really tremendous.
And Zachary Quinto, or Quinto.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Who was so great in that, will soon be on Broadway in The Glass Menagerie, and that incredibly beautiful production I saw at ART.
ART, yeah. Other than that, we have the opening of Soul Doctors coming up on Thursday.
Yeah.
So are you guys scheduled to see that soon?
Yes.
I'm going to Wednesday.
I'm going to the Wednesday matinee, actually.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and I must mention on Tuesday night, the 13th, boy, there's a lot going on, isn't there?
We're getting geared up for the fall, yeah.
Two performances, one at, I believe, 8 and one at 10, of a tribute to Julie Wilson at Iridium. Julie Wilson, who is most famous for her, I guess, second career as a wonderful, amazing cabaret artist, but who, you know, was a Broadway performer from way back and is in, who plays Lois Lane. I always have to stop before I
know. Yeah.
Lois Lane / Bianca in the TV version of Kiss Me, Kate that we discussed a week or two ago when we were talking with Patricia Morrison. She also she did a lot of stock and some of our listeners may know her from her performance in Legs Diamond, which was her last Broadway show. But she's a great lady who's still very much with us, and two tribute performances featuring lots of really great people on Tuesday the 13th at Iridium.
All right. So you guys have anything else to add before we wrap up?
I'm going to be seeing my first non-professional production of Les Miserables at the Snug Harbor Cultural Center on Staten Island on the 18th, so I can report on that. And then I don't know if I mentioned this, I'm going to be headed up to Boston. They're going to do an open-air free concert with full orchestra of Kiss Me, Kate with Mark Kudish and Carrie O'Malley. Really?
Wonderful.
Yeah. Doesn't that sound great?
I mean, wow.
Like a great part.
More information about that. I want to see both of them in that.
Yeah, I'll send you the info. It's a midweek, unfortunately, for some of us who don't live there, Wednesday the 21st, but I'm planning to see that.
Where is it exactly, Dave?
It's at the Hatch Shell.
Oh, okay.
On the Charles River, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it a free event? It is free.
It's okay. Free, yeah. Mm-hmm. I forget the name of the organization. Talking to Gerard Alessandrini, he said he always used to think it was called the Half Shell.
Yes, that's true.
I tell you, there is no bigger Boston fan than Carrie O'Malley.
Oh, really?
Boston boils through her blood. She and I go back and forth on Yankees Boston and the Knicks and the
So she's having a better summer than you are.
She's having a much better summer than I am. You know, and Carrie is great because she moved out to the West Coast she's gotten so much great television and film work, but she keeps coming back to New York to do and the East Coast to do great things like this. We'll have to see if we can get her on. When is the Kiss Me Kate thing?
The 21st.
21st of August or September?
It's August.
August 21st. So I'd call Carrie, see if we get her on next week.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful. We've already had Mark, I believe, as a guest quite some time ago. And I think it sounds like a great parts for both of them. Mark, I think he almost did Kiss Me Kate several times, but for whatever reason, it never happened. So this it really sounds like it could be a lot of fun.
Great. All right. So, Peter, anything exciting coming up for you?
You know, I'm going to go see Les Mis 2 in Done by Kids this Saturday. So we both have Les Mis in our future, no question about that. So I'm looking forward to seeing Harbor 2, which is a play by Chad Begelin, who we know better as the lyricist of Elf and The Wedding Singer. So he's done a play that's at 59 East 59th, and I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, we chatted about that last weekend with Michael. Gave us a review of that, and it sounds very exciting. Where is the Les Mis on Saturday that you're going?
Somewhere upstate in Rockland County. That's all I know.
Oh.
I mean, I have it written down somewhere, but I don't know specifically.
All right.
It seems to me that there are some a few shows that are being done everywhere at the moment, one of which is Hello, Dolly, and also Les Mis. I wonder if it's maybe because there are rumors that, well, in the case of Les Mis, it's more than a rumor that it's coming back to Broadway. So I think maybe a lot of companies are trying to sort of get it before they can't do it again for God knows how long. But isn't that interesting how that happens?
Yeah, that's, you know, especially with the success of the movie and things like that, there's lots of people doing Les Mis right now because it's a real big moneymaker for theater groups.
But with Dolly, you know, now we're reading reports of Kristen Chenoweth, who I have to say I cannot see in the role. But at any rate, that's going to be back on Broadway. That's been a Broadway revival of that has been discussed for years, it seems like, with various people attached. But in the meantime, there's that fantastic production at Goodspeed that Peter and I both saw and loved. And then there's another one which I wish I could get to right now at the Cape Playhouse with Beth Level.
Yeah,
as Dolly.
Mm-hmm. All righty, so let's wrap up here. I want to remind everybody that you can subscribe to these podcasts by going to the front page of BroadwayRadio.com. There's a subscribe link. That way, each and every time we have a new episode of This Week on Broadway, it'll be automatically downloaded to iTunes for you. You can listen to us in other ways. You can listen to us on Broadway World Radio. Broadway World plays us Wednesdays at noon, Thursdays at 7 p.m., and Saturdays at 2 p.m. Or you can listen to us on the Stitcher app, which is an application for your iPhone, your BlackBerry, your Android device. That'll play This Week on Broadway automatically will stream to you, so you can listen to us that way. If you do have an extra moment, please stop by iTunes and leave us a review, because good reviews will help other listeners find our podcast and expose more people on iTunes to This Week on Broadway, which would be great to grow the audience. So, and contact information for Peter, Michael, and me are at, is at BroadwayRadio.com. So you can find email, phone call, phone numbers, and other ways to get in touch with us, including Twitter, Facebook, and other ways. So on behalf of Michael Portantier and Peter Felicia, this is James Marino saying thanks so much for listening to Broadway Radio this week on Broadway. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Slept till noon, oh. Don't let me be old already. Don't make me be responsible already. Don't let me be old already. Don't make me be responsible already. Don't make me be anything but one of those young men. Didn't be for no oaks, nor grants, no series intended.